When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, my philosophy has always been, if you're not a baseball fan, I still think you should come to Wolf Stadium and have a good time. That's the kind of show we try to put on, from, the music to the entertainment to between inning promotions. I mean, we hope you get to see a win, but, you know, most of all, we want you to go home and say, man, that was a great time. I can't wait to get back.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. This episode keeps up the recent theme of changing things up a little bit from usual episode structure as we are looking into life in the minor league baseball front office. Today I'm joined by Burl Yarbrough, the president of my hometown San Antonio Missions, the AA affiliate of the Padres. Burl joined me to talk about his 35-plus year career working minor league baseball, how he's seen the industry change from stadiums, promotions, player profiles, food, everything else. Ton of great nuggets in this one over the 30 years he's spent in San Antonio. We talk about going through an affiliate change, building a new ballpark, and how much the on-field product really matters in minor league baseball. I was thrilled to talk to Burl. Hope everyone enjoys this as well. A lot of really cool things that we can dive into and a little insight onto the other side of life in the minor leagues. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoyed this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And go check out past interviews. And if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA Podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. We are now in minor league and MLB season. Check out the prospect hot sheet, MLB fantasy baseball news, college. We're bubble watch is going. I mean, we're almost to the best time of the year, which is college baseball regionals, NCAA baseball tournament. A lot of good stuff there. It is always a good time to be subscribed to BA. And with that, let's talk to Burl Yarbrough. All right, joining in for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm, our first front office staff member here on the show. He is the current president of the AA San Antonio Missions, longtime member of that staff, Burl Yarbrough. Burl, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hey, Kyle, great to be with you today.
I'm very excited for this. I've obviously known you for quite a long time, and you have been, as someone who grew up in San Antonio, you have been a staple of Missions baseball. I want to go kind of, I guess, back to the beginning. When did you know you wanted to work in baseball or just in sports?
You know, I think growing up, grew up in Fort Worth and, obviously loved all sports, but really baseball was my first love. And, before the Texas Rangers moved up there, we had a minor league team that played at Turnpike Stadium in Arlington, the Dallas-Fort Worth Spurs. So they were there as I was growing up and playing Little League. And so used to go to a lot of their games back in the day and just, you know, really kind of fell in love with the game and also the minor leagues. And so that's, you know, really started at an early age, figured out pretty early that I wasn't going to be good enough to play for a living. And but I certainly wanted to be around sports and been very fortunate.
So you graduate from UT Arlington in the early 80s. And then what is at that time minor league baseball? It's kind of pre-revolution of minor league baseball. What was that early career path like? I saw you had an interview with the Cowboys. What ended up leading you into San Antonio?
You know, when I originally graduated from college, I had a friend whose father worked for the worked with and knew some people with the Dallas Cowboys. So I went and interviewed with them for a job. And, you know, this was just right out of college. I'm sure I was one of many, many people trying to get a job with them at the time, and met with one of their vice presidents. And, you know, he kind of suggested that I go back to college and get a master's degree in sports management. And, I just, spent a few years in college and really wanted to get out and work for a while. So I said, oh, that's nice. But, you know, I kind of put it on hold and went out in the real world and got a job and worked for a couple of years. But always in the back of my mind, you know, wanted to get into sports. And, you know, so I knew that's something that was probably a good route to go. So ended up going down to got a master's in sports management down in Miami, Florida. And, you know, wanted to get into baseball from there. And so, you know, started, worked a few jobs before I made my way to San Antonio, but, you know, enjoyed every place I've been and learned a lot and, you know, was really fortunate to come to San Antonio in 1988.
Well, when you get to San Antonio in 88, it's funny, the previous episode of the show is also not someone who's a player. It was ESPN's Ryan McGee, who recently wrote a book about his summer as an intern and kind of talk about what, you know, what those duties are, and that in minor leagues, you have to be a jack of all trades. You have to do a lot. And there are people who spend 1 year in the minors and then you've spent 30 plus years working in the minors and working your way up. When you get to San Antonio in 1988, that is the year Bull Durham comes out. That is when minor league baseball is kind of starts to have its renaissance and come into that new age. What did your initial job duties look like in 1988?
Well, you know, and I'll even go back before that. You know, 1985 was my first full-time year in baseball, and I was in Florence, South Carolina, in the South Atlantic League, Florence Blue Jays. Running a Toronto Blue Jays. I was the assistant GM to Dan Rakowski, who is now the president of Charlotte and just one of the most successful people in baseball. And Dan and I were a two-man staff back then. And you know, I mean, we worked together in 85. He moved on in 86. I became the GM there. And you know, I again, a very small staff. I worked by myself till March and brought somebody in to work the season with us. And you know, I used to think, man, we do everything they do in the big leagues, except, you know, we just don't have as many people, you know, I mean, and really when you have a staff like two people, I mean, you were absolutely doing everything from cooking hot dogs to, you know, rolling the tarp and anything else in between. But, you know, it really prepared me for, you know, San Antonio. And when I got here, I mean, you know, we probably had a staff of six people. So, man, I thought we were in pretty good shape. But, you know, even to this day, you know, in minor league baseball, you wear a lot of different hats. And, you know, whether you're taking tickets at the gate, pouring beer, I mean, for anybody that's been in this game any length of time, you know, you've probably almost done it all.
Around 1988, too, is when the first wave of minor league stadium revolution starts and modern stadiums start being built. When you get to San Antonio, you guys are playing in old VJ Keefe Stadium, which as I got into high school and college, I ended up playing a lot of games in, but that is a Division II baseball stadium that has now itself been redone for St. Mary's University. But as you're going into that, you're working with that kind of stadium, and you know, when negotiations start, it's kind of I think we'll probably circle back around to it towards the end of this podcast. But what was your role in seeing a new stadium be built, or you know, just seeing those negotiations unfold?
You know, for us, you know, at VJ Keefe, it was a beautiful, you know, great little ballpark to watch a game. And, you know, it served as the home of professional baseball in San Antonio for 25 years here. So, you know, when I got here, I mean, I knew that our goal was to get a new ballpark. And so it's something that, you know, we started working on, you know, from day one. But, you know, like anything, you got to have to kind of wait till, you know, everything's right. And, you know, for us, we just started talking with city officials and, you know, Nelson Wolf became mayor and was very instrumental in building this Wolf Stadium that we're in now. And, you know, but it was a 2 or 3 year process of getting into that. And I think what was good for me was, you know, I mean, when I came to San Antonio, I was young, been in the game for 3 years, and my staff was very young. I mean, being at VJ Keefe, it just allowed us to learn the business even that much more and help prepare us for when we, you know, moved into a new ballpark in 1994.
When that ballpark is built, what were the priorities? Like VJ Keefe, again, like you said, it was pretty basic. It had, you know, it had a stands. It was a nice little ballpark. I always loved playing there. What were in 1994, I guess, early 90s when you're in the process of making this, what were the priorities? Like in that time, what did a stadium need to be modern? Because I think if I remember correctly, Wolf was the first modern Texas League stadium. So what were the big upgrades at that time?
You know, I mean, back then with city officials went and looked at some of the newer ballparks that had been built at that time. And, you know, when I think about where we're at now and where we were then, you know, and some of the ballparks that have been built over the past few years, I mean, our business has changed a lot and the priorities are different. You know, I think for us, when we built Wolf Stadium in 94, I mean, you know, hospitality wasn't as big a part of our business as it is now. And I think, you know, you look at ballparks being built now, you know, hospitality is one of the first things an organization is going to think about. And that certainly wasn't at the forefront for us, you know, in 94. I mean, we're wanting seats, skyboxes, you know, team facilities as far as clubhouses and things like that. So, you know, the evolution of these stadiums is, you know, not that different than a computer or a, you know, an iPhone.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned kind of your priorities. If you could walk people through the difference between being high up in the MILB front office versus being in the MLB front office, what are your main focuses?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we do everything a major league team does, but sign players or hire the manager and coaches, you know, so we are not responsible for, you know, scouting, signing and developing players. We handle basically everything else that is part of this business. You know, we are in charge of the facilities. We are charged in all business aspects of ticket sales, advertising, travel, you know, everything that it takes in running a business. You know, we do everything except, you know, the player end of it.
With that, I want to get into kind of the team aspect. How much of what's happening on the field affects what you guys are doing as your job, the team winning, the talent on the team, and has that changed since you started?
You know, I don't think it's changed a lot at this level. And in the minor leagues, you know, I mean, we don't control, you know, the players or how talented our team's going to be. You know, I've always said that, you know, people know who our mascot, you know, Henry the Puffy Taco is, but they may not know who our shortstop is, because our shortstop really becomes famous, you know, in a year or two when he's up in the big leagues. You know, a lot of times, you know, certainly back in the, you know, back years ago, you know, when, you know, people didn't follow the minor leagues like they do now, you know, we'd have a guy come in town that, you know, unless you were just the most avid baseball fan, you'd have no idea who it was. But, you know, you will remember you saw him play in San Antonio when he's on TV, you know, in a couple of years. So, you know, I think that part of the business we've seen change over the years.
Definitely. And I wanted to ask you about that too, because like in 98, Adrian Beltre was in San Antonio, but a couple years ago, Fernando Tatis Jr. played in San Antonio, and the profile of him, even as a minor leaguer, especially that season was when he kind of blew up. Have you seen the difference in people who will come see him, even, you know, come see prospects, or an emphasis on your team of, hey, we have these guys, we should, you know, there's more opportunity to promote guys like that as they are less unknown now?
Oh, no doubt. You know, with social media and you know, the growth that we've seen of that over the years, you know, getting messaging out about players, you know, I think major league organizations are better about promoting their players now than ever. And, you know, when I was first in this business, you know, Baseball America might have been it, you know, as far as is really covering minor league baseball or college or the draft and things like that. So, you know, I think back, you know, in 96, we had Paul Konerko here, who was a first round pick of the Dodgers. So, you know, you certainly knew of him and everything when he came here. But, you know, he had a lot of players around him that were really good in the organization as well that weren't as well known. But I think now with social media and everything, you know, the better players are certainly known as they progress up the minor league chain. And so, yeah, the fans, you know them. And, you know, we see it not only with our team, but like, you know, when Frisco comes in and they got Leiter on the mound or whatever, you know, I mean, people follow, you know, other organizations and know when some of their prospects are going to be playing here.
Mm-hmm. What else have you seen that moves the needle as far as what's happening on the field versus you guys getting butts in seats? You know, the missions, especially I think during the Seattle years, like right when I was in middle school, you want some Texas League championships. And then there's also, you know, the occasional rehabber comes to town. Like I remember watching Cole Hamels pitch at Wolf Stadium. And every now and then we get local guys. We had, you had Blake Allamond a couple years ago, who was, you know, from the area. He's not, you know, had a couple others pass through like that. So what do you see on the field that moves the needle?
Well, you know, I think for us, you know, winning is really, you know, it's great if it happens. We can never count on it. You know, I mean, people always ask, you know, hey, what kind of year are you going to have? And I, you know, honestly, you never know from year to year, you know, how your team's going to be. And, you know, until you go through the league and see the other teams, you know, because you could have an organization that's loaded at the AA level. Whereas, you know, maybe we aren't at this time, you know, maybe the talent for San Diego is, you know, one or two, you know, levels below us. But, you know, winning is nice when it happens, but, you know, we've never gone into a year and promoted that, hey, we're going to win it all, because you just don't know. So, I mean, I think that's a different part of our business than the major league level. Is, you know, I don't think winning is as important to our fans. I mean, they come out here to have a good time, and I don't think they live and die with every victory like you'll see at a major league level.
With the player aspect, like, you know, we've mentioned Beltre, we've mentioned Paul Konerko, Tatis, we've had a lot of people come through. San Antonio Pedro was here, Mike Piazza was here. Is there, when you have this year over year thing, have there been players on the missions who even at that time have stood out to you as this is that guy?
You know, I mean, being in the business as long as I have, yeah, I've seen some guys and there are certain people that their talent just really stands out. And over the years, Raul Mondesi, you know, we had here, I had Mark Whitten, who had a nice big league career when I was with the Blue Jays in A-ball, and just, you know, the athleticism and the talent that some of these guys have is, you know, just incredible. And, you know, I grew up playing baseball and saw some pretty good players when I grew up in high school and college and things like that. And, you know, I mean, Kyle, you played college ball and so I know you saw some players, but, you know, for a guy to become a professional and move up the ladder, I mean, there's nobody here that's not ultra talented, you know, but there is, on occasion, you see a Beltre, Fernando, Tatis that just, you know, really stands out and you know, they're going to go on and have a great career.
Curious about your relationship with the players over the course of the career. Like you said, you guys handled travel, especially in the early, you know, it was common for you guys to point them in the direction of this is where you need to go to get an apartment or things like that. And, you know, you get here in 88 as a much younger man, and you can, you know, you're closer to the age of the players and you've seen this transition. So what is, you know, how much relationship is there between the front office and the players?
And it's changed over the years, you know, when I was, you know, first in the business and close to their age is one thing, but, you know, our staffs weren't as big then. And minor league baseball staffs weren't as big, you know, team staffs as big and everything. So we did a lot more for the players and had a lot more interaction with them, helping them find a place to live and things like that. So, but now, you know, that things have changed over the last few years and Major League, is more in control of players in minor league baseball. And, you know, now that the players will be our union now. And so, you know, things have changed over the years. But, yeah, we had a lot more, interaction and, with the players earlier in my career than we do now.
Since in your tenure, we've had four different affiliates here in San Antonio. The Dodgers had been a long time relationship. That comes to a head in 2000. How much of a role do you guys play when there is the affiliation change?
Well, I mean, back, you know, before things changed, we would sign 2 or 4 year deal with a major league organization. And, you know, we had you wanted to find a partner that, you know, you felt comfortable with and you felt like had our best interests at heart as well as their own. We were very involved in decisions when we changed affiliations over the years. And, you know, in San Antonio, we were with the Dodgers for a long time, and then we switched and went with the Mariners, for 6 years, and then, you know, became a Padre affiliate. And, you know, what happens, Kyle, is, you know, a major league team may get a new GM, a new farm director, and you know, they change their philosophy on how they operate in the minor leagues. And so generally when we made a change of an affiliation, it was our choice to do so. And it was just, you know, things had changed with our relationship with the major league teams. And we felt we weren't being treated the way, you know, we felt we deserved.
Do you have to sell yourself to the new affiliate in that scenario? Like, this is, you know, hey, this is why you should choose San Antonio, or is it more kind of an understood thing of if the match is there, it kind of is what it is?
You know, I think in a lot of cases, you know, it kind of depends on the market you're in and you know, what the situations are for, you know, clubs, you know, if they're somewhere where they don't want to be, we had choices pretty much every time we made a change. I think a lot of it sometimes is relationships. When we switched to become affiliated with Seattle, Pat Gillick was the GM at Seattle at the time. And I had worked with him with the Blue Jays because I'd been part of a Blue Jay farm club. And so I knew Pat and knew how he ran an organization and how he treated the minor leagues. And so, you know, it was an easy decision for us, to go with the Mariners at that time. Cardinals, I think, were here and wanted to come in at the same time. I'll never forget, you know, I mean, they both, you know, both organizations came here. We met with them and we had to make a choice, which one we wanted. We went with Seattle and had a great run with them, won a couple of Texas League championships. But, you know, later Pat left there and they got a new GM. And again, you know, their philosophy changed on how they were running the minor leagues. So we decided at that point to, you know, look around and see what else was there. I think we had, you know, three different organizations that wanted to come, you know, to San Antonio then. And we met with all of them. Kevin Towers was the GM of the Padres then, he came in and we just felt very comfortable with him and made the decision to go with the Padres.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With the duty that it as you know still is something you guys do, hasn't changed, is the handling travel and figuring out these crazy schedules and getting players to and from and in hotels. And things were a lot different in the early 90s as far as accessibility, check-in room rates. There's no Google. Can you like walk me through, you guys get the schedule, you get your team, you know, you get your team in 1993 and you've got to figure out how you're getting them to Corpus and how you're getting them to Midland and things like how much organization does that take?
You know, I mean, it there's a lot of work that goes into it. And, you know, I mean, I've been here long enough to kind of see a lot of different, angles of it. And, you know, when I was first here in San Antonio, we were flying quite a bit early in the Texas League. You know, flights weren't real expensive, and you know, my God, I could buy Kyle Bandejo a ticket, and you know, if he gets sent off, I'll just send you know somebody else in his spot, no big deal or whatever. But you know, can't do that now with airlines. And but yeah, busing and hotels, you know, we all work together and in the league that we're in. And you know, it there's a lot of work that goes into it, but after doing it for so many years, you know, it really kind of becomes routine, and just a matter of a lot of detail. You got to stay on top of everything, because you have, you know, player changes, and sometimes you may have a manager, or, you know, that wants to leave a day early and things like that. But, you know, one thing minor leagues is known for is travel. And, you know, it has been tough over the years.
I can imagine. You mentioned that when you started, it wasn't as much about the hospitality aspect, and that has become a huge part of minor league baseball. I throw back to I think a documentary you and I have discussed, the 50 Summers one about the Omaha franchise, and they talked about how it's become kind of a carnival baseball essentially. When did you start seeing that was more of a priority? The change into this needs to be this family event, and there needs to be different aspects that are beyond a baseball game, and the food and beverage has to change to be a little, you know, a little more creative. Like, when did you start figuring out that you had to start implementing different things into making this more of an experience?
You know, I think really it started in the mid-90s, and, you know, a few years after we, you know, we moved into Wolf Stadium. Again, it just wasn't the priority back when this was built, or the other ballparks before that. But, you know, I think we discovered, you know, man, it's great to sell tickets, but, you know, why don't we sell food too? And, you know, I always had the philosophy that, you know, 70 nights a year, I mean, we're the biggest restaurant in town, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, we are serving, you know, a lot of hot dogs, a lot of popcorn, a lot of sodas and beers and things like that. So we're the largest restaurant in town, you know, when we have games. And you know, I just think things evolved, and, you know, talking to businesses and groups, you know, I think group business, you know, also has grown over the years. You know, when I first got in the business, I mean, basically, you know, you're just kind of relying on walk up people coming here, and you know, we would sell some groups, but not, you know, not like we do now, where we have a staff, you know, dedicated to, you know, calling businesses and organizations and everything. So as those in the mid-90s started, you know, we started to see success that other people were having, and you know, we started adding, you know, hospitality areas here at the Wolf. And again, it has become, you know, a big part of our business model. And I think all the new ballparks that are being built, you know, it's really one of the first things that people think about in a new ballpark.
And a big part, too, is bringing the local into the ballpark. Like you said, when you started, it was just like hot dogs, popcorn, soda, beer. And that's stuff that you can get at, you know, can still get at any ballpark, but also a movie theater or something like that. A lot of minor league ballparks, and you guys included, bring in, now have local vendors or things with local touches, local beer and things like that. How do you go about kind of making those, you know, making those matches? You know, like there's the Bahama Bucks, you know, stand and things like that, and local vendors and local beer, and like, how do you identify this might be a good piece of San Antonio to bring into our ballpark?
You know, I mean, we have Bill Miller, you know, who mm-hmm. is a staple barbecue restaurant in our area, and so they've been in our ballpark for a few years. But you know, barbecue's something, you know, we wanted a ballpark, but you know, we can't do it as good as Bill Miller does. So you know, we started talking to them a few years ago, and they have a stand at our ballpark. And so it allows us the opportunity to bring in some vendors that, you know, can do something better than we can. You know, again, we can do the hot dogs and nachos and things like that, but you know, there are some specialty items that, you know, I think it's great if you can bring some local partners to bring in. And so I think everybody tries to do that, in some form or fashion, you know, and we've been lucky here in San Antonio to have a few really good partners.
Something else that teams have to do, and has, you know, started over the course of your run, is the promotional aspect, theme nights, on-field entertainers, that, you know, everything. And that, and I want you to walk me through first. I want to know some of your favorite entertainers and on-field events and the history of that. But I want you to walk me through what I think is one of the more successful things that any minor league team has ever done. Walk me through the Flying Chanclas.
Well, you know, I mean, that's been something that has changed our business, and has, you know, been one of the most rewarding things that, you know, I think we've done in my time here in San Antonio. But, you know, minor league baseball wanted to do an initiative to reach out to the Hispanic culture, which is a you know, something in San Antonio that, you know, we've always been very involved in. But you know, it was a group effort on our staff. You know, as minor league baseball was adding teams to do that, you know, try to get that identity that each market tries to get. And you know, our guys were, you know, our staff was around a conference table and throwing around ideas and trying to come up with a name that we felt would, you know, be, you know, fit in here in San Antonio. And our GM, Dave Gassaway, you know, came up with Flying Chanclas. And, you know, I we've been talking about it for several weeks and hadn't really come up with the right one. And I actually wasn't here the day that, you know, they came up with that. And you know, they called me and said, "Hey, we think we got it," and told me what it was. And, you know, I mean, my first reaction was, I don't know, you know, I mean, I didn't want to offend anybody. And so I said, let me think about it or whatever. And Dave, you know, went home and talked to his wife, who's Hispanic, and she kind of, you know, wasn't sure about it or whatever. But, you know, I think I took about a day and called him back and said, "Man, I think that is good." And so we went with it, and man, it's been one of the greatest things that has happened to this organization.
I think it is safe to say that you see Flying Chanclas merch around the city even more than Missions merch. It is, anytime you go to a game, the line at the Flying Chanclas merch tent is just, it's always long. And it has just been a joy, and it's been able to also, you know, using it during the COVID year as the collegiate league team and things like that. It's just, it's one of my favorite parts about Missions baseball. But with on-field promotions, again, I kind of want to throw you back into how you've seen this develop. I always think of like Star Wars Day as the quintessential minor league promotion. You know, have someone dressed in a stormtrooper outfit, probably just sweating every ounce of water weight they have. But what, you know, when did you guys start implementing promotions, and were there ones that stood out to you as, you know, favorites, or ones that were just a complete bust? You hear all stories about guys just throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks.
Oh, there's no doubt, you know, and things work differently in different markets, you know. But I mean, I've been in the business long enough where Max Patkin, who, you know, was in Bull Durham, man, he was one of the first touring acts ever. You know, the flying, or you know, the famous chicken, you know, had him many times, you know, Myron Noodleman. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of those that we've done over the years. You know, promotional giveaways is really a big thing. And, you know, we've seen those change over the years. For us here in San Antonio, I mean, we have discovered our jersey giveaways are the biggest thing that we do. And, you know, so I'd say for the last half dozen years, you know, we give away about four jerseys a year. And we had our first one last homestand, which we gave away a Fiesta jersey, which for those of you from in San Antonio, you know what Fiesta is all about here, and kind of our Mardi Gras is how I explain it to people. And you know, it was just a fantastic night because our jerseys are a big thing. But you know, we've done many things over the years. Some work, some don't. And you know, I think the great thing about our business is we all share ideas. You know, I mean, we're in different markets all over the United States, but you know, what they do in Amarillo really is not going to affect what I'm doing here. So we've always over the years shared a lot of ideas, and you know, if somebody comes up with something new and successful, we let, you know, we let everybody know about it. And you know, so we can try it in this market or whatever. And that's been very helpful over the years, just the communication we have with you know, other clubs and other executives.
So would you say minor league baseball is kind of a rising tides lift all boats things? Like everyone's working together in that regard, no real rivals?
You know, I'm not going to say there's not a few rivals because we've had some over the years, but I think business-wise, you know, you do work together. And, you know, as a league, I've always seen that. And as an industry, we do. But, you know, I mean, hey, when we were, you know, when Round Rock was in the Texas League, I mean, believe me, we wanted to. They were a rival. You know, El Paso for years was a big rival of ours. Now it's probably Corpus and everything. So yeah, there's some rivalry there, and you know, everybody wants to be the best. But you know, I think this is an industry that everybody's very willing to share their ideas with each other, and I think it makes everybody better.
Have there been any promotions that you guys have tried that stick out to you as just an even increased level of weird or something you thought was going to work that completely whiffed? Like, is there, you know, over 30 years, are there any strange ones?
You know, I mean, we've never been real big into, you know, I mean, there are some people that, you know, really turn it into, you know, carnival circus type events. And you know, we've never really done a whole lot of that here. But you know, I understand that it works. And again, some markets are different. You know, I mean, there are things that, you know, they do in Little Rock, Arkansas that I don't think I could get away with here. And you know, so we don't try. But you know, hey, I love to see people try new ideas. You know, there are some that I'd like other people to try first, and then if it works, then I, you know, I might be interested. But you know, it's I think that's a part of the business. And you know, we talked earlier about, you know, winning and losing. And you know, I mean, my philosophy has always been, you know, if you're not a baseball fan, I still think you should come to Wolf Stadium and have a good time, you know. And that's the kind of show we try to put on, from you know, the music to the entertainment to, you know, the between inning promotions. I mean, you know, we hope you get to see a win, but you know, most of all, we want you to go home and say, man, that was a great time. I can't wait to get back.
Yeah, my kid got to karate chop a puffy taco once, and that had nothing to do with baseball, and he had the time of his life. So I think that quantifies minor league baseball in every sense. But with that, kind of jumping into the present day, and I mean this year, games are shorter. The pitch clock things had been trending that way in the minor leagues earlier. Like I remember going to a game last year with the pitch clock in effect and just being like, wow, that flew by. It's for me, it's great on TV. But if I'm driving out, to Wolf, I would like to stay there and enjoy myself a little bit longer. I don't care as much how much, you know, I'm not watching commercials at home. So I don't really, you know, it doesn't really bother me. How have you guys adapted? What are you seeing? And I'm sure that's a constant thing of trying to, you know, minor league baseball is always adapting. So what have been the early steps and what do you see moving forward?
You know, I mean, I think that's one of the things, you know, minor league baseball, you know, we've been, you know, doing some experiments for MLB that, you know, they're trying out the minor leagues and several of them now they have taken up to the big league level. But, you know, I think a few years ago, you know, when they started the ghost runner in the 10th inning, you know, I mean, I certainly was not for it at the time and you know, didn't know, you know, how it would go over with the fans even, but I got to tell you, I love it now. And you know, I mean, for somebody that has, you know, we had a 26 inning game here one time, you know, and we had a lot of, you know, long games over the years, 21 innings, 18 innings, you know, knowing that you're not going to be here all night is okay. And the fact that, you know, you can have a winner a lot quicker, I like. But, you know, I think the clock, you know, you got bigger bases now at this level to try to you know, create more offense, more stolen bases, the shift change. I like those, you know, I mean, as you know, watching so many left-handed hitters, you know, get robbed by hitting a bullet to short right field, you know, get out at first base, just, you know, never seemed fair to me. And so I think a lot of these things that, you know, we have seen over the last few years, you know, will make this game better.
Yeah. As someone whose favorite team employs Joey Gallo, I'm a huge fan of getting rid of the shift, with that, you know, you've been in San Antonio, you've stayed for over 30 years, you've raised your kids here, you now have a grandson who's at the stadium all the time. Baseball is, in sports in general, are not typically associated with longevity or being in one place. Think about all the players who come through and you know, managers and coaches and things like that. What has kept you in San Antonio for over 30 years?
Well, I love my job. You know, I mean, I tell people I've never really felt like I had a job. You know, I mean, I get to come to a ballpark every day and, you know, it's just something I've always been blessed. I've got a great staff that works here and I've got a number of them that have been with me over 20 years. And, you know, I think our culture is as good as any organization going. You know, we really enjoy what we do. We enjoy putting a good show on for the baseball fans of San Antonio and love what we do and you know, love the sport. So, you know, I think it's a combination of all those things over the year. You know, I grew up again going to games, minor league games as you know, as a little leaguer and, you know, I'm very proud of the history and tradition that San Antonio has. You know, I mean, our business, you know, dates back to 1888 when the Texas League first started. And, you know, there's not a lot of businesses in this city that have been around as long as we have. So, you know, I just feel like I'm a steward, you know, for this organization and this industry in San Antonio it's been a wonderful run and, you know, I worked for one owner for 35 years. And now this year, our club was sold in November. And, you know, I think the future is very, very bright for this organization. And, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, the next few years as I think we move on to the next step.
You're doing my transitions for me because I was going to mention that now in San Antonio, we have arguably the best pickup basketball team ownership group in minor league baseball. But with that, baseball in San Antonio moving forward, I have long held that we are a super underrated sports city. I mean, we packed the Alamo Dome for that AAF football league that was doomed. All the other stadiums were empty and San Antonio packed out the Alamo Dome for that. So I know a stadium is something that has been constantly mentioned. It's always in the paper. It's, you know, a talk first thing when the new ownership group is taking place. That's what the stories are about. Where do you see baseball in San Antonio in 10 years?
Well, you know, I think, you know, first and foremost with new ownership and having local ownership for the first time since the early 80s, you know, this group bought this ball club, you know, with one goal in mind, and that is to get a new ballpark in downtown San Antonio. You know, I think this is the right group to make that happen. You know, and so that is certainly what, you know, the goal is over the next few years to figure out how to make that happen. You know, so we're going to be here at Wolf Stadium for a few more years. This is our 30th year at the Wolf this year. And, you know, business has never been better. You know, I mean, I think we have continued to grow over the years, and business has, you know, our support, you know, among fans and local businesses has grown year to year. But I think now with the local ownership and with some of the members of the ownership group we have, you know, it's an exciting time for the future of baseball here in San Antonio.
Absolutely. So as we wrap, every guest gets this question. If you were to give yourself a pep talk back at like 22, or even heading into this job, you know, first day at San Antonio, what would that pep talk look like?
Man, I tell you, I would have never, you know, I would never have guessed that I would be here as long as I was. But, you know, I think one thing I learned, you know, before I came here was, you know, just to, you know, work as hard as you can and try to outwork, you know, the other people. And, you know, I had some really good people that taught me the business that I learned from. And, you know, I think since I've come to San Antonio, I wanted to create a staff that, you know, felt the same way and had the same goals and that we all work together to, you know, get better every year. And that's always been our goal here in San Antonio, to improve year to year to year to year. And I think we've been able to accomplish that, but I still think there's still a long way to go. And I'm really excited to be a part of you know, this organization.
A little rapid fire for you, then I'll let you get out of here. Would you rather attend the morning day kids game, the morning kids day game, or an extra inning game?
Extra inning.
Favorite concession food?
Oh, you know, out here at Wolf Stadium, kettle corn.
I would agree. I would agree. Favorite minor league ballpark that is not Wolf Stadium?
Charlotte, North Carolina. Just beautiful downtown ballpark. Man, it's one that I would love to see in San Antonio.
I think that is back-to-back wins for Charlotte in that question on this podcast. Best mission you've ever seen?
Man, that's a good question, because I've seen a lot of great players. I'm going to say the most talented guy I saw here when they were in this Texas League might have been Raul Mondesi.
Last one. Do you have a nightmare pulling the tarp story?
I've gone flying in the air, you know, pulling a tarp before. I've had staff members rolled up like a sausage dog, you know, in the tarp. So, you know, I think the nightmare is just, you know, wind and rain at the same time. You know, I think the trick is to get this thing down before, you know, the weather gets too bad. But every once in a while, you got to put it down when the wind's blowing, you know, 50 miles an hour, and that's when it gets dangerous. So, you know, I've been part of a lot of tarp pulls, and it's something I think everybody should experience at least once.
I agree. It pulling tarp builds character. Burl Yarbrough, that's all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
Thanks, Kyle. It's great to be with you.
You got it. And that's it for today's episode from Phenom to the Farm. Huge thanks to Burl Yarbo for stopping by, talking us through his career. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and we will be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.